Welcome to Mentoring Moments. Mentoring Moments is a sub-series of the E-Commerce Edge podcast. It is composed of clips taken from Jason's one-to-one and group mentorship sessions. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Ramiro Velasco from Go Avance to the podcast. Welcome, Ramiro.
Dude, Jason, seriously, thank you for having me. We've already been chatting before everyone at home. We've been chatting for the past like half an hour, just vibing. So this is going to be good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we were talking off air about the fact that you're living in Zapopan, which is basically a suburb or a colonia. Well, it's actually technically its own city on the fringe of Guadalajara. And I stayed, my wife and I stayed directly in Zapopan for over a month when we first got to Mexico. It was like the fourth city we stayed in. We first got here. We stayed there for a month. And you said we were just joking about the street that we were on. We were in Calle Escorpión, which is Scorpion Street. And you said that where we stayed was like 4 minutes from where you live.
Literally, we were almost neighbors when you were here.
Well, had I known, we would have caught up. That's amazing.
We would have absolutely gone out, at least gotten beer somewhere.
Yeah, I have margaritas, tequila, something. There and you were also saying that before we get into the nitty gritty, but you were saying that you've lived all over the world. Technically, you were born in Mexico, but you've lived because of what your father was an engineer and he was working globally. And so you've lived in something like 12 or 15 countries. You have almost no accent at all. Obviously, your English is bang on. Your Spanish is bang on. Man, what a lucky person. Two of the top languages in the world. It makes it easy for you to get around.
Dude, you have no idea. Like, you just hit the right word. Because I was just telling you, man, like, I wasn't really, like, I didn't travel. I got taken. I got yoinked when I was young. Like, it was just like, hey, this is the best, like, setup. Like, if this was a video game, I got min-maxed is a word. Like, I got optimized and just lived abroad for almost 20 years. And now I live 500 meters from the hospital where I was born. So, just a funny coincidence.
And only an hour away from Tequila, the city of Tequila. And man, I tell you, that's a party too. I love tequila. We seriously considered, although we ultimately have decided to go and live in Puebla, we Guadalajara, we loved the state of Jalisco. We loved all the blue agave fields. We loved the agriculture. We loved that easy access to Ajijic and Lake Chapala. Like that whole area was such a cool vibe. Yeah, and I was just telling you that the place we stayed in, the Airbnb we stayed in, it was over 40 degrees almost every day we were there because it just didn't have AC.
Brutal.
And you were explaining that Guadalajara didn't used to get that hot, but man, did it. We were there in summer, so it was hot.
It's brutal, man. Like, the weather has changed over the past 10 years to where now our winters are like 2 weeks long. We get cold for very little time, and the summers are brutal. We're talking 39, 40 degrees C. Nowhere has air conditioning because no one used to need it 10 years ago. So only new developments have AC. And also things like the city's in a valley. So pollution tends to get caught in like a bowl. And sometimes you just get grimy and sticky. And I'm not doing a great job of telling you, man, it's a great city. I'm not going to say
it. It is a cool city. It is a cool city. About 5 million people, much more navigable than CDMX. Yes. But it's got all the modern amenities. It's got amazing, absolutely amazing malls with experiences in the malls, like multi-level 4, 5, 6-story malls. I think it's called Mall Antara, I think is the one down the road from Zapopan there. And we went there. We went to the movie theater there. It's a cool, like that city is, it feels almost like the Silicon Valley of Mexico a little bit. It's a really cool happening city.
You want to know something? It's actually been called the Silicon Valley of Mexico because a lot of tech companies set up their base here and it just works. It's just, honestly, if you're going to visit in the winter,
Totally. Yeah. And it's the same down here in Cancun where I am now. I would encourage everybody to make at least one trip down here. Go ahead and do Cancun, do Playa, do Tulum. But definitely come in the winter because this weather down here at the moment is spectacular. It's 25, 26 degrees, no humidity, no wind, sunny, clear. It is truly, I can understand why people go to the Mexican coast in wintertime because, and I've been on the coast in summer here and it's like hell on earth. It's so hot. But I tell you, the winter is just, it is so nice here right now.
So I did Puerto Escondido in July. Oh, that was a quick one-way trip to sun. What's the word? Sun poisoning? Is that a thing?
You can get sun poisoning. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's basically heat stroke.
Yes. Oh, it was rough. And I still loved it.
Puerto Huerto is one of my favorite places in Mexico. We stayed there a week and a half, and it was very cool. We really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed it, and enjoyed Oaxaca. There's lots of cool places in this country, but that's not what I've got you on to talk about today. I could walk down memory lane all day, but I brought you on as a guest mentor, and I brought you on to talk about something that I know very little about because I'm not an expert in it, and that is LATAM and Amazon specifically. Now, you help. You're a consultant. You have your own business now where you're consulting with LATAM-based businesses to figure out how to get them enable them to sell successfully on Amazon. And this is so timely because I tell you, I do almost all of my online shopping here. I do either on Amazon. I would love to buy on Mercado Libre, but for some reason they seem to struggle to get my account even open now that even though I've supplied my ID and my residency and everything, they can't seem to get my account open. And in terms of online shopping here, I do almost all of my grocery shopping online here because all the major almost all the major grocery stores offer both click and collect and delivery is very cheap. And it's easier. What a lot of people may not know is that for some reason in Mexico, the lines at supermarkets are usually like super long. Like I'm not talking like normal long. I'm talking it can be 30 people deep at every single line, and not every supermarket here yet offers self-checkout. And so if you don't, and especially on a Sunday, and of course the Sunday here, oftentimes Mexicans will work 6 days a week. And so Sunday is the family day and it's the supermarket day. And so if you have the unfortunate situation where you have to go to a supermarket on a Sunday, you better plan to wait in line. I've waited in line almost 2 hours before.
So
this is how bad it can actually be here. And that's why I think online shopping for supermarket goods is so popular here. And it's growing very fast because if you don't have to go in and fight those lines, that's the way to do it. And so between Amazon and being able to shop online grocery here, it's made my life a hell of a lot better. And I tell you, what a lot of Americans in particular may not understand is that they've got a really good system here in Mexico around contract drivers for Amazon. It's almost like an Uber-like service. It's almost Uber Eats kind of service where they've got private drivers not using Amazon vehicles, using their own private vehicles, delivering stuff to your door from Amazon. I've gotten Amazon deliveries up to 9 p.m. at night. I tell you, the level of service that they give you from Amazon here is outstanding. And what another thing that a lot of people might not know is that these drivers and these delivery people have to be absolute experts because there are a lot of addresses here that are not based on street numbers. They're based on walkway numbers. So they will have, if we talk about Guanajuato, for example, most of the addresses don't have a street number. They've got a pathway number. So there's all these houses built on a hillside, right? And most of those home frontages are not on a road frontage. They're on a walkway frontage where there's like these little walkways that go all up these hillsides, these very steep hillsides. I know we're not talking specifically about Amazon, but we had deliveries made to us in places where it was very, if you were not a local delivery driver that knew the local neighborhood, the local privadas, the local colonias, if you didn't know those addresses and the way those addresses work, you would have never received your goods. So I am surprised, A, how good the service is through Amazon in Mexico, how fast things ship, how fast they arrive, but the quality of the delivery drivers and the effort that they put in to get you your parcel, even when it's behind a locked gate, it is phenomenal how well Amazon works in this country.
It's honestly, and I think it comes from a place of, I'm just going to hop into consumer mentality or the psychology, but it does come from a place of distrust where I got here 7 years ago. So I've seen the transition happen over time, right? And when I first got here, I was already buying my toilet paper on Amazon.co.uk, right? From 2012, I was doing this. And I had people literally around me go, wait, and you buy it online and it gets to your house? With distrust, with the idea that no one can follow these addresses. Because you know what? Mexican Post is not bringing stuff. So yeah. I think Amazon and Mercado Libre had to step up and be like, look, we need to like nail this every time because consumer trust is so important and non-existent right now. I just got, if I get like a friend of mine sends me a package from the US to Mexico through USPS, I'm getting it in 2 months. Because what's going to happen is, I'm shaking the whole table. What's going to happen is it's going to get 2 days in, to like the border in Mexico, Canada, the Mexico-US border. And then it's going to take like 2 months for Mexico Post to go, oh, I forgot we had that. Let me just drop it off. And I have a street address with a postcode and everything. So like when you, like you said, like all these informal street addresses, how do I get it to you? And we actually ran into this issue where we were doing seller fulfilled. So basically we would ship our own stuff at the very beginning instead of FBA and Mercado Food. And we would go into things where it's like, this address doesn't exist. Hey, FedEx won't allow us to put your address in. Please, how do we get this to you? I don't know, man. It's there's a lot of challenges with being here. There's a lot of challenges. I don't do my shopping online. My grocery shopping, that's just because I need to go look at the stuff. But yeah, this transition to digital has just been absolutely beautiful for comfort. Because yeah, those 2 hour lines are brutal. You know what? What's really good for the line though? I just play chess. Like I just play on my chess app.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely have to have your phone with you. That yeah. is for sure. You absolutely have to have your phone with you. Now, if it, you know, what I learned, I've had one other gentleman from Mexico on my podcast before, and it was amazing. We had a fantastic chat, and he's been working in e-commerce here for, I think, over 20 years as well.
Oh, wow.
And he's watched the evolution of e-commerce happen in this country. And he was talking about some of the difficulties, particularly of standing up a direct consumer e-commerce website because of the red tape and because of all the things that you have to do and the government permits and everything else. It's very hard, but B2B e-commerce in this country is a lot easier. But he didn't really speak to too much of the opportunity around Amazon. And I think that as far as I can tell, and I haven't spent too much time in other LATAM countries, but I'd love for you to validate this. But a lot of the same challenges that exist in Mexico around a growing e-commerce industry exist in almost all Latin American countries. So those informal addressing is very common across the entirety of LATAM. And so sure, in the major cities, of course, if you're in CDMX or if you're in Guadalajara or if you're in Puerto Vallarta or anything like that, most of those addresses will be pretty formal addresses. They'll be street side addresses. They'll be well known. They'll be easy to get to. And you're going to always receive your parcel. But when we combine the scale of Amazon across LATAM, their penetration, and in Mexico, I don't know what is across the rest of LATAM. I know Mexico's right near the top of e-commerce penetration. But even in Mexico, only 9% roughly of total retail in Mexico is e-commerce. Now, that blows my mind because that's where New Zealand was pre-pandemic. Pre-pandemic, New Zealand was only about 9%. And then it jumped straight up to about 12% and it's held steady at about 12%. So I come from a place where I lived there for a long time. So I know what this evolution of e-commerce adoption looks like from below double digits into double digits and beyond. And then we look at, in terms of Western countries, the UK is above everyone and they're over 30% as a percentage penetration of retail. But from your perspective, because you're working specifically with companies across LATAM, particularly with a particular focus on Mexico, what do you think are the biggest challenges to getting these vendors to be able to sell on Amazon?
So do we have 4 or 5 hours to go? Oh, man. So look, a lot to digest. Let me preemptively, like you said, Jason, we're not like, I don't want to go into Amazon lingo, into Amazon jargon, into any of this like seller stuff. Let's look at the market as shoppers, which is something that we all are. We know how our own shopping habits changed when we discovered Amazon. And we know that came first. Oh my God. A lot of Zoomers might hear this and be like, what? No, Amazon has always been around. No, it hasn't. No, it very much hasn't. We know that that's right. I can shop for my books online. Neat. Okay, cool. Maybe we all weren't around in 1999. But then it became, there's a specific item that I'm looking for. Let me check if it's cheaper on Amazon. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago where most of us went, I have a thing that I have to buy. I don't know the brand. I don't know anything. Let me just look up on Amazon. So we go from, oh, this is neat to, oh, this is niche to, oh, this is my general solution for everything. And actually, I trust Jeff Bezos with my baby if he comes around. Like, he has like my credit card. He has my address. He has everything, like everything about me. Actually, I have, because I have a seller account, he also has my face, which is scary.
Yeah.
So that is the transition that Mexico and Latin America is going through, where it's going from, wait, this arrives to your house, to can I get this online? And just checking. So you'll see people like, you'll be at the Walmart and you'll see looking at a set of knives or whatever. Oh, what's the price on Amazon? All right, cool. Like I'll buy it here or I'll buy it there. This transition I think we saw make hundreds and thousands of millionaires in the U.S. because this is an expanding market. The market that's really losing share is brick and mortar retail, right? But what this means is, and obviously companies are slow to adapt and all this, what this means is there is a growing pie. And as someone that's played competitive video games his entire life, I refer to this as PvP market, player versus player markets, which is a shrinking pie. So when you look at Amazon US, it's not a shrinking pie, but it's not going exponential. What that means is you want to sell on Amazon, my guy, you better have either really good skills, like really good skills, or you better have cash to throw at the problem. And Amazon US for sellers has become this like, oh, you want to launch this product? You need 100 grand to really make sure that it's taking off, right? Mexico is at this earlier point where the pie is still growing, where the established sellers aren't the end all be all, where people are launching private labels, where people are going out, finding manufacturers and going, hey, let's make a deal here. Like we can go 50-50. I'm going to do the branding. You give me the product. We'll sell it. Split the profit, right? What this means is that there's massive opportunity for the next 7, 8, 10 years, like we've seen in the US, right? Because by the way, the US is still a gold mine in Amazon. I'm not going to say it's not. If you know what you're doing.
It's much harder
because the pie is not growing at the same rate. It's much easier. And we all know this instinctively. It's much easier. I have cats. It is much easier for me to convert. It's easier for you to convert me as a cat litter buyer when I type cat litter into Amazon than if I type sustainably yours cat litter, which by the way, best cat litter, no, not sponsored, super, not plug. Everyone should use sustainably yours cat litter. Once I'm there looking for the brand, dude, it's much harder. So you want to catch people in this growing stage of the pie where they're going, can this solution be found on amazon.com.mx? And that's where we're at right now. So what's really exciting to me is the possibility of positioning me, myself, and mostly my clients. I sell very little of my own stuff. Mostly my clients to position themselves to where like, all right, I'm 15, 20% of your US sales right now. Where are we going to be in the over the next couple of years when the country's growing, like Amazon's growing 30% year over year over year? That's what we really want to take advantage of. And speak of the devil, look who just showed up.
One of the cuties making their appearance felt.
Yeah.
I tell you what's interesting about this is that I can still jump on amazon.com.mx today and there are still some categories that are pretty light. There are still some areas where there's many more open categories on amazon.com.mx than amazon.com. And in fact, sometimes even the exact same product sold on amazon.com as amazon.com.mx is significantly more expensive still on amazon.com.mx. And so I still have my two accounts. I have my amazon.com.mx account, and I will compare that with my amazon.com account when I'm looking for something. And not all products on amazon.com can be shipped to Mexico, but many can. And so I'll compare the prices. I'll say, first of all, I'll compare the range. I'll check amazon.com.mx first. We're just talking about user behavior here. If I can't find it on amazon.com.mx, I'll try to find it on amazon.com, and I'll try to find someone that can ship to Mexico from amazon.com. And then if I can find it in both places, obviously I'll compare prices, right? It comes down to variety and availability first for me. And then the secondary consideration is price for me. And it just feels like it's a little bit like amazon.com was literally about 10 years ago. And
yes,
the same with amazon.com.au 5 years ago. Same kind of thing, right? Where they started out and I saw them enter into Australia. They haven't officially entered New Zealand yet. They will ship from Australia to New Zealand, but there's no amazon.co.nz yet. And they're coming though. They're going to build a warehouse in New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
But I watched the entire genesis when there was no Amazon in Australia to when they had over 200 million products available in Australia through amazon.com.au. Yeah. So I watched that happen over a period of about 5 or 6 years. And I don't know how long Amazon has been popular in Mexico. Maybe that's one of the first questions you can answer for me. When did they really start to get traction? When did amazon.com.mx launch? Do you have any idea? And then second of all, when did it start becoming popular in this country?
So Jason, I love that you live here and you've just said like, you validated. I've made these points so many times. Just to hear you say them, I feel like we got together before this and I was like, hey, this is a, you just hit the nail. Like you hit every nail on every head, like with all of these assessments. To answer your specific question, Amazon's having a little bit of a harder time here in Mexico. And that's because Mercado Libre was already around. Mercado Libre, for anyone that doesn't know, is an e-commerce platform, a weird baby between Amazon and eBay in the way that you get ranking and in the way that sellers become more important. But basically is the brainchild of a couple Argentinian guys that went, wait, why are these guys, why is Amazon, why is Bezos not here? And they launched it to great success. You have a per country division for Mercado Libre. So Amazon then comes in later and goes, hey, Mexico, I'm here. And we go, we already have that. We have Amazon at home. What are you talking about?
We have a homegrown version of Amazon.
Exactly. But even then, Amazon is the king when it comes to customer trust, to customer experience, to ranking products, to a bunch of things, where Amazon is slowly gaining ground on Mercado Libre within the market. And you just said everything that the reason why I got into what I do was literally I was doing consulting. I was doing general Amazon knowledge, like knowledge-based consulting about growth and everything that needs to happen. I consider myself really good at that. And then I went, wait, for those of all US companies, and I go, wait, I can't buy the things that I'm working on. Like, I just did all this work into making this listing look really nice and talked about like the communication and the presentation of the product and all this stuff. And I can't do anything with that. Like, I can't buy the product here. What's going on? And then I would go to buy it. And like you said, it's 2 to 3x the price here in Mexico. Because what happened is some reseller said, I can drop from the US. I get an order. I make the order on Amazon.com and ship it to your place. And then clients obviously went, wait, I don't like that. Can I get my product in the country? And I went, absolutely. Let's create a shipment. And then, no, we can't. No, we can't. Because Amazon, because Mexican bureaucracy will not allow you to start a local business entity that easily or to have a tax ID, which you need for legal ownership of the product. And all of these, and as it was like a Russian nesting doll, where every single step was like, oh, no, the bureaucracy.
And just getting an RFC as a business is a bureaucratic nightmare, because I've got an RFC as an individual, and I know what's involved in getting that and the kind of paperwork and all of the not only the residency documentation, but my personal documentation, my proof of ID, my proof of address, my CFE bill, like just I think people who haven't ever lived in Mexico, I got my driver's license here. I did my own residency application. I went through the whole residency process on my own. I didn't have a facilitator, and I did it with my wife. So I had a dependent spouse that. So I've done all of this stuff on my own, and I feel like I have a much better appreciation for not all of that bureaucracy. It's not all downsides. There's some upsides to it, and I won't go into the upsides, but you just have to accept that if you move to Mexico, you have to accept that things are done differently here, and that anything that touches the government in any way, there's going to be a significant amount of complexity and a significant amount of time associated with that process, whether you like it or not. And if you want to do business here, you just have to accept that. It may change sometime in the future, but for the foreseeable future, this is how it is. And you have to accept that if you want to do business here.
It's yes. And honestly, like that's where a lot of it came to for us. We're like, look, this bureaucracy makes no sense. I mean, my partners are all American, and they go, what do you mean? It takes a week to get a business entity. I'm like, yeah, nice try. It takes going to the lawyer's office 6 times and then calling his dad when he won't answer. Because this is a real experience. I was like, I need a lawyer to work with. My dad was like, oh, he's the lawyer that we've used our whole life. And I go to him, he's like, oh, work with my kid. And then his son just ghosts us, because this is how sometimes it happens. And if you're not here, I had literally went to knock on the lawyer's office. And I'm like, I'm here to speak to this lawyer. And he goes, oh, he's not here. I'm like, can I see his dad? Okay. And I go to his dad and I go, hey, man, like, what's up with your kid? Like, he's not. Okay, let me get that for you. This, every single step along the way, and I think we should all think about it like this. Every single bit of uncertainty adds a little bit of risk. When you're talking about like the investment that you have to do to sell in or like to live here, you're like, there's always that little uncertainty. Every single step along the way that is just a little bit of a gray area that you don't know what to do makes it a little bit less likely for you to bite the bullet, get my residency, bite the bullet, get my driver's license, which, by the way, mine's expired, so you're doing better than me as a resident. And what we figured is there are so many sellers. First of all, there's so much cash that's going to start flying into Amazon.com.mx. And there's so many sellers that are going to want to get in, and there's a disconnect there. So why don't we why don't we just say, yeah, sure, come on in. I'll help you. I'll set you up. I'll sell you a product. I'll do you. Because we're not even talking importing logistics approvals.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh,
customer
yeah. And the security of shipments and all and insurance and all of the customs steps. And yeah, there's a lot to it. And so it sounds to me like what you're saying is, hey, we want to create a smoother runway, a smoother pathway for foreign businesses that want to set up a Mexico-based business entity so that they can find success on Amazon.com.mx instead of doing effectively cross-border trade from their American entity into Mexico as an approved destination. Instead of doing that and having all the associated extra logistics costs associated with that, we actually want to allow you to create a local entity with an RFC, with a business permit, with insurance, with all the things you need, all the 20 boxes that you need to tick, with a local registered business address, with all of your local shareholders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You said, why don't we try to build as much of a turnkey solution for those types of sellers as possible, right? Literally, it's never going to be 100% turnkey, but you're going to try to make it as close to turnkey as possible. Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
Literally, what we said is we have a business entity. We have an RFC, and how hard is it to get an importing permit? All right, it's doable. Let's do that. How hard is it to handle? We have, instead of FDA, we have COFEPRIS. How hard is it to get COFEPRIS approval? All right, we can. And we just started adding more to our plate. And we said, every single step that we take is something that our clients don't have to, which gets me really excited because I was in consulting for years and years, probably 7 years. I don't know, way too long. And what you learn is there's things that are definitely out of your control, right? Like I consider myself incredibly skilled at Amazon selling. And guess what? Their product, I'm not going to be able to make work. This is just the case. Sometimes no one wants to buy your thing. And it's a really tough conversation to have. And you have to have it because you're like, I'm not going to keep charging you. And then, so you have to have this conversation that's like, hey, man, it's like breaking up with someone. And you go, hey, man, I don't know if someone else can make this work. I can't. Like, I'm sorry. But it's always this uncertainty, no matter how I've had products that I'm like, this is never going to work. And then I make it work or we get takeoff. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. But It's what you sell when you're a consultant is I am probably your best bet at getting results, right?
I stack the deck in your favor.
Stack the deck in your favor, yeah. And that leads to uncertainty, that leads to maybe I had an off day and I didn't make the best decision. There's a lot of stuff. Whereas what I'm doing right now is direct value, man. It feels so good to be able to say, this would have cost you 30 grand. It's going to cost you nothing. Like, bam, because this is an experiment that you would have liked to run. Like I want to get into Mexico. All right, cool. That's going to charge, take you turn, like cost you 20, 30K. And then I go, actually,
and
no,
six
it's
months
free.
Minimum.
And six months. And 6 months. So already I've provided the value. So already my conscience is like completely clear to like, just cool. Now let's try to make this work. I'm a big fan, whether in like my employment history or in my business history, or I'm a big fan of being undervalued. I'm a big fan of never feeling like, oh, I get paid too much for what I do. I always feel like I am severely undervalued in this case. Why? Because it gives you a little bit of that like freedom to go, yeah, sure, I messed up a little bit, but like I'm still your best like value for it, whatever. Like it puts you, it takes you away from imposter syndrome and it puts you into this resentment of like people don't value me, but I'd much rather live in that space. Because now that way I know that I'm guaranteeing value to everyone that I work with. So I don't know. I'm really happy with this idea of there's no uncertainty here. You know what? This was the barrier to entry to try Mexico. This is a barrier to entry to try now. If the upside, fantastic. Oh, I don't make money unless you make money. So obviously I want the upside, but that's that difference of I've already provided that value just helps me sleep so nicely.
I can totally understand that because I try to price myself in the same way to where I feel like you won't ever find anybody else. Even if somebody did what I do, which there aren't many people that can do what I do the way I do it. But I always want my pricing to feel like they feel lucky to have been able to work with me. That's what I want all my customers to feel.
Yes.
And I want them to walk away feeling like that was the best experience I've ever had with any consultant ever. That's what I want them
to
feel.
Are you sure you're not Mexican? Psychologically, and I think this is, we can get social for a second, but Mexico is a very service-focused country. And I do think our culture is a little bit subjugated. It's a little bit, we were a Spanish colony for hundreds of years. And there is this like inferiority that does happen that, oh, it grinds my gears.
Yeah. But
ultimately, I think it does lead to a healthy mentality of, let me provide more service than I'm getting. Because it does, you feel it when you go to have dinner with someone and they're fighting over the bill to pay. Yeah. Like rather than split the bill, everyone's going, I'm paying. No, I'm paying. No, I'm paying.
Yeah.
And I like that. That is my vibe.
Yeah. That culture is much more like the Asian culture. My wife's Asian. And so that culture is much more like the Asian culture, that whole fighting over the bill thing, wanting to always, you'd rather someone else owe you than you owe someone else. That's the way you always want to be. That's the mentality, right? And
yes.
And so that's part and parcel of the culture. And in your world, in the way that you provide services, is it that you help shepherd them through that process, or you actually become the seller of record underneath your company, your RFC, you effectively become the distributor of their products underneath your Amazon account? So they don't actually have to even set up a business entity. They don't have to get an RFC, et cetera.
The second one. So we actually tried to do the first one. The first one. Oh my God, man. Like we said, we can be, like you said, shepherds, or we say Sherpas, guiding you up.
Man, we can do the heavy lift.
Yeah. No, because what ends up happening, you say, absolutely, I'll help you. And then you turn to someone and they go, I'll have it to you by Friday. And you're like, all right, I'll give them some leeway. We'll have it to you by Monday. And then Friday comes around, you're like, hey, what's up? No response. Monday comes around, hey, what's up? Tuesday comes around, hey, what's up? The client's now going, hey, you said I'd have this Monday. And you go, and you call them and they go, like the lawyer, whether it be the RFC person, like for SAT, whether it be anything. And they go, oh yeah, I didn't get to it. I'll get it to you later this week. And you're like, so that sort of like chasing people around, which said, we figured, hey, this could make a lot of money. It's not worth it. Like I said, I don't want people mad at me, man. Like you can tell from my vibe. I'm not a salesman. I don't want to get people mad at me. Actually, dude, the way we set up our client is we turn them away so fast. Like we literally go, yeah, this product's not going to work. I don't want you mad at me. Like we do that so much because it's like the way our like client vetting processes is like we try to find every single no we can, which sometimes like when you're trying to scale a business, like your stakeholders will get mad at you. In my case, like my partners will get upset with me. But dude, it has to make sense. It has to make sense for you. I don't want an angry email because an angry email is going to bum me out. And then it's going to like the whole day is a write off.
How does the process work of onboarding? So do you actually take possession of the goods? Do they transship under bond to you? Do you have local logistics that you manage? What is the structure of the relationship that you have with those foreign sellers who want to enter, say, the Mexican market or further afield in LATAM?
Totally. And by the way, Jason, I didn't, like, I know you just asked this and I didn't duck the question. I talked about something else. You're totally right. It's so funny, dude. This happens to me so much. You didn't even talk about our business. I'm like, yeah, I was vibing. No, look, we're distributors. It's the easiest way to think about it. The distribution model has existed since the times of I go to India, I get some spices and I walk them over to Europe and sell them, right? This is nothing revolutionary. All we did was look at a problem and figure out the specific local solutions that we came with. We were doing originally, have you label everything, go through the importing process, get it to Mexico City. Okay, delivered the duties paid. Great. And then we said, even that's too much work. So we then said, why don't we just ship it to Laredo? Ship it to our warehouse in Laredo. We'll figure it out. Hey, we need these labels. Can you label? Not, don't worry, we'll do it. Listen, we want this off your hands. Because ultimately, and this is something that I think all of us can relate to, is everything has a monetary cost and then also everything has an opportunity cost of time investment. Mm-hmm. And if I have to go in and deal with, I don't know, like logistics, and I have to go in and deal with importing, and then I have to deal with the approvals, and I have to suddenly, like, I'm talking about like 60 hours of work because I don't know what I'm doing and I'm Googling things and ChatGPT is getting things wrong. And suddenly it's like, is Mexico really worth it? Is it really? Do I want to? Dude, just don't worry about it. Get me the project in Laredo. I'll cross it over If it needs to be labeled, I can label it. If it needs to be approved, I can approve it. Not me personally. I don't have a stamp, but I talk to the people that get it approved.
In customs, you deal with all that.
Yeah, exactly. In customs. And on top of that, like, I come from a huge Amazon background, right? So already you're in good hands because, like, my SEO is top notch. My, like, branding is top notch. And we're doing this for all of our consumers. Why? Because we work on consignment off a percentage of gross. Like, I am underpricing myself so heavily because my goal isn't, I want to make the most money out of every single unit. A distributor is going to mark it up 40% or whatever from the wholesale price. I'm going, listen, all I really care about is, like, trying to be the biggest seller in Mexico. All I really care about, like, it's a small thing. But I'm like, listen, man, like, as long as I can get there, I don't need to be squeezing. Like, I would rather put in a couple more hours, get more people in, do a little bit more work, and then just, one, improve the Mexican consumer experience by not marking up the prices like we just established that people do. And two, just not have a freaking headache for you. Dude, like, mm-hmm. I'm just this guy in the middle going, yeah, sure, yeah, sure, yeah, sure. And then just making sure that everything's working. So I'm just really happy and proud of what I'm doing. It's such a weird feeling of no one's mad at me. Right now, some people are mad at me, but it wasn't my fault.
And so how many brands are you working with currently?
So I can't say that, Jason. I'm not at liberty to say, but we do have 6 seller accounts, all populated and all doing very well.
And so you set up a new seller account every time. Is it when you take on a new category or when you take on a new brand or you take on a new, like, what dictates that you'll set up a new seller account?
We have a certain amount of SKUs per seller account and clients per seller account. It becomes, some of the solutions that we end up having get sketchy as we add accounts, but they have to happen. A lot of Mexico Amazon, for example, I'll give you a quick example. Mexican Amazon doesn't have connections to warehouse software. So right. Mexican. Oh, that was so Aussie. That was so New Zealand. That was so Kiwi. Right. That was so Kiwi. So we have a team of people literally just putting orders from Amazon to. Yeah. And the reason we made multiple seller accounts was because we said, we know bureaucracy. Any one of these gets taken down. We can't afford to have our clients not selling.
I see. So it's almost like a backup.
If anything goes wrong, yes. If anything goes up, we just download a category listings report, which is basically all of the products on the page on the seller account. Or we just upload it somewhere else and we're good. And we don't stop. Like, we're not.
Wow.
Can't knock us down. Oh, man. It's funny. Business in Latin America, a lot of it is workarounds and loopholes. And I'm sure it's the same everywhere else. I don't have the experience everywhere else. But it's just like, how much can we get away with?
Experience mostly in Mexico or pretty much across the whole of LATAM? You run the same model across the whole of LATAM.
So we're working on Colombia right now. Hopefully we want to get Colombia up and running soon. We want to tackle Brazil. Brazil is on the roadmap. Brazil, man, if you ever tried importing into Brazil and they hit you with 40% tariffs, you make sure you get it right. Because in Brazil, there's certain workarounds as well. But right now, we launched in Mexico. We expected to expand to the rest of LATAM faster. But honestly, we just haven't been able to keep up with just the demand. Yeah, yeah. It's, man, I'm going to take the first weekend, the first holiday I've taken all year. And even then, like last year, I worked through December. I'm looking forward to it so much, man. My therapist just went, you have to.
You're going to break. You got to take a break, man.
Yeah, yeah. But it's... I don't know. I feel like amazing. To some extent, I feel like I am doing a service for my country in the way that I'm making the consumer experience better. And that's really what, like, just feels good. Hey, you didn't get scammed paying 700 pesos for a 200 peso product.
Yeah.
I did my job. Like, yeah. So.
And what would you say? What's your recommendation if somebody is considering breaking into the Mexican market? We've talked about some of the challenges. We've talked about some of the bureaucracy. We've talked about some of the red tape, some of the risk. We've talked about all those things, but if someone is getting mentally and emotionally prepared, and even from a business process perspective and everything else, if they're trying to start to understand what doing business in this market looks like for them. Now, I understand, obviously, if they partner with you, there's a lot of this stuff that just goes away because effectively they're dealing with a single distributor in Mexico for their products that can act as effectively the local agent for their products. I get that. Clearly, it's still better if they understand some of those processes, some of those additional barriers, some of those additional challenges. There's going to be some additional costs and there's going to be some additional red tape associated with selling on Amazon, even via distributor in country, in region. What are the types of things that would make your job easier if, for anybody that's considering selling via you or somebody like you in country? What are the types of things you would expect them to do in preparation of being able to do this and doing it successfully?
I would say, first of all, and this is the most important, and no one likes talking about this, but margins. Where are your margins? Not because it's impossible to get like margins in Mexico, it really isn't, but we can use that to assess, can we take a little bit of a cut and undercut the market? And can we just rocket ship to the first page? Do you have that leeway? If you sell a product that's really tight on the margins, it's going to be very rough to get that like startup, right? That's one. Demand, two, I currently work with some products that the demand just doesn't exist, but we're building it. But that is a completely different ballgame. So if it's a product that people don't even know exists or is a solution, then just come into it understanding that it is a long burn. So I'm so open with these conversations where I'm like, hey man, like I love your product. I think it's a great solution. It's gonna take us a year for it to really have some real demand because people aren't gonna know it exists. Right? Okay, cool. Like niche solutions, like things like that. Mostly like visual TikTokable products is where that goes in, that it's a little bit rougher. Other than that, is your product restricted? Does it go on your skin? Does it go on your belly? That sort of stuff. Just come prepared to like the conversation with, these are my active ingredients. And I have a team that goes, all right, we can, or no, we can't. If you have HS codes, like Harmonized System International Importing Codes, that's also nice. But honestly, I don't expect any of it before my conversations with people. Because I hop on the call and I'm like, hey man, what do you sell? This, okay, cool. Let me go in. Let me like live on air. Let me check what the demand is like here. Does this work? Does this not work? Can we make this work? How are we going to tell your story? Like on the branding side, can we do that sort of stuff? And on the call, I'll tell you, yeah, that works, or no, that doesn't work. Even if it's through me, if it's somewhere else. And I've had people shut me up and be like, hey, it actually did work, jerk. But I play on the safe side. So what should you just call me. Give me a call and then we'll figure it out.
Sounds good. And do you also take care of any Amazon ads that they need to run, anything like that? Do you help them with that too? Okay, so obviously they don't have to translate. They don't have to do any of that. I'm guessing that from a product information perspective, they can either supply it in a CSV, they can give you access to their PIM system, they can basically, however they can get you the product information you need that will make the product sellable on Amazon. And I'm guessing that sometimes if they've got a local Amazon account and I'm out on Amazon.com, they can pull that information out of that account, they can send that across to you in a CSV. I'm guessing that there's multiple ways that you can gather this information so that you have the data you need to be able to make the product fully enriched and attributed on Amazon so that it's searchable, findable, not just category-wise, but all the attributes as well.
Exactly. That's it. And honestly, it's so funny. I used to work on other people's products for a living through consulting. Now I still work on other people's products, but now it's on my account. And it's not like I see the direct benefit from, obviously you sell more, I make more money, great. But it's also really nice that like my job is now just, all right, let's figure out strategy, let's figure out selling, let's figure out, and that's what I'm good at. So I don't know, I like what I'm doing, dude. Is that weird?
No, I think everybody should strive for that. I really do. I think they should. Listen, Ramiro, it has been fantastic chatting with you. I appreciate all the extra information you give me, and I appreciate sharing with me the trials and tribulations of getting up and running in Mexico on Amazon. People like you, I think, again, just like me, I think that I'm in a space where I think if there was even 100 of me, that we could all eat, because there's just a dearth of this capability, I think, in the market. And I feel like even if there was 100 of you in Mexico, I feel like that would be a good thing. I feel like at only 9% e-commerce in the country, as a percentage of total retail, I feel like we got a long way to go. We need lots of people like you. We need lots of people like me to help make this happen in new markets. It's really important. It's really important that we bring in these skill sets that oftentimes we developed and learned outside of Mexico, for example. And it's important that we bring those skill sets into the country, because they're not going to, you can't learn from nothing. Like the thing is that it's really difficult to get upskilled into this within Mexico, because there's so few people teaching it in Mexico, because there's so few people that have done it. And so therefore the skills, the bench is not that deep yet. And so it really requires people that have developed these skills offshore somewhere else in another country, in another region, whatever the case may be, to bring those skills in country and share that both in country and with the wider world. And so that's what I'm trying to do with this podcast. I'm trying to make this information accessible to everybody everywhere at all times. And I really appreciate, like people like you coming on to share. Now we're coming down to the end of our time together, but I always like to turn the microphone over. I let my guests ask me one question, any question they like.
And as if I haven't spoken enough, Jason.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
I know you're such a shy, introverted fellow. So what's your question? What's your question for me today, Ramiro?
I have a personal question for you.
Love it.
You've been in Mexico for, you've said, since March. So I'm trying to do the math. What, 9 months?
So almost a year.
Almost a year. Let's call it a year.
Yeah.
Would you do it again?
100%. No question.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. What's your favorite? If you had to live in one place in Mexico and you said, this is going to be my base for the next 5 years, what would it be?
Puebla, because we're going there in January.
But that's a risk. You haven't even been. You don't know what.
We've been to Puebla. So that was part of our trip.
Right.
We've been in Puebla. That was the reason we wanted to travel for the first year, was so we went to all the major cities and towns that was on our short list of places to live. And we stayed in most of them for around a month. And so we spent a little bit of, we didn't spend very much time in Puebla because it wasn't even on our short list. We weren't even thinking Puebla long term. We thought it was going to be a jumping off point for other things. We never thought we would live there. And just by accident, when we went to Puebla, just by accident, we had been traveling for a, and when we arrived in Puebla, we wanted to take our dog to a local dog park for some exercise. And when we first looked at Puebla online, before we ever left New Zealand, we only knew about the colonial center. We didn't realize that there was another half to Puebla that wasn't colonial. We didn't realize that it had a modern half, because you never see, you never hear any information online about the modern half of Puebla. You only hear about the colonial half. Yeah. You only hear about Cholula. You only hear about all the surrounding areas. You don't hear about the modern half, but it actually does. It has an incredibly modern half. There's the biggest Volkswagen and Audi factories outside of Germany are in Puebla. There is, it's an absolute massive hub of manufacturing, cutting edge. Puebla has some cutting edge architecture. My wife is an interior designer, so design is very important to her. Things that are beautiful are very important to her. The corkscrew that's going up, first of its kind building in Mexico. It's won architectural awards globally. It's just cool. I love the fact that it's got an old half and a new half. Plus you have easy access to nature. Plus you actually have four seasons. It's not hotter than hell there. And you're only 2 hours away from Mexico City. So you can access everything in Mexico City easily. And that drive between the two is beautiful. It looks like New Zealand. So for us, it has like the best of all worlds. And we can easily fly anywhere that we need to go from there.
I hate that I can't disagree with you. I am famously, and joking, obviously, but I'm famously a Puebla hater. Amongst my friends, because I have a lot of friends from Puebla. And I joke a lot about being anti-Puebla, but I can't disagree with you, man. What a great city.
Yeah, it's a cool city.
We got to scrub this from the internet, but everything else.
No. Guadalajara was on our short list. It's like in our top three. We loved Guadalajara. We loved Merida. Merida's too hot, though. It's too hot. In summer.
I don't want to go too long. Last question. Food. Sure. Puebla or Merida?
Puebla by far. By far.
By far?
By far. By far.
I
actually was a little bit disappointed by the food in Merida. I thought it was okay, but I wasn't like blown away by it. I wasn't a massive fan of the Yucatecan cuisine. It wasn't really like my thing. And the Yucatecan cuisine quite dominates there. Like some of the things I like, but I still like much more traditional Mexican cuisine than I do traditional Yucatecan cuisine. So for example, like Puebla has just, the moles and the, like the cuisine in Puebla is pretty spectacular, actually.
That hurts. I'm a big I'm a Yucatecan cuisine guy.
Okay. See? And that's the beauty of Mexico. There's something for everyone here.
Yeah, there really is. So everyone should come down, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. You could easily come down here and get fat if you're not careful. Very easily.
Oh, yes. Yes. I did when I got here. So absolutely. Oh, man. Jason, seriously,
listen, Ramiro, I'm going to put all of your links in the show notes here for people to get a hold of you if they want to reach out. It would be super easy. They can go to your website. They can get all the information they need. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Look forward to speaking to you again soon, my friend.
Thanks, Jason. Likewise. It was so nice. Thank you for having me.
If you'd like to get mentored by Jason for free, head over to greenwoodconsulting.net, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click Get Mentored by Jason.